Now we come to the nitty-gritty in chapter 12 of the functioning human person at the human level. Based upon the fact that we possess the Spirit of God in us, Paul says, "Now therefore I beseech you to present yourselves as a living sacrifice." That doesn't mean you go out and crucify yourself. It means that you present yourself as a human person to God and you're alive. You don't don a saffron robe and go out and set yourself on fire. That's a dead sacrifice. You live. And you take God into your life. And that brain starts functioning in this world, and you have to cope with it. I've been talking to you for weeks about how to cope with life at the human level without putting everything on the basis that your life has got to be a series of minor miracles to get by. You have a personality, you have a mental process going on in your mind that you have to live with and cope with. And your personality is not going to be suddenly revolutionized into a perfect person. I've known thousands of people, not hundreds, thousands of people in circles where it is believed that if you really, really, really take Christ into your heart, you're going to be a totally new person. And tomorrow you're going to be very lovely to live with. And I haven't seen those thousands of persons that lovely to live with on a day-by-day basis. Anybody can go into a meeting and get hilarious. And you can even be hilarious for a week if you push it, or if you're going to a mountain retreat or the canoe on the lake, and everything helps to make things a little better. But the day-to-day nitty-gritty confrontation of the practical things of life requires something deeper than merely a wave of the magic wand to say, now I am a different person. And so I've tried to go into it with you to say, what is the meaning of this idea that we become a new person? It's one thing to possess the Spirit of Christ in your spirit. It's another thing to take the meaning of spirit in your life and use it to help you reorient your personality. But it's not done in a sweep of the magic wand. It's done in understanding who you are and joining with Christ to help you put your life together on a better basis. What is this newness, this renewal of the nous, the mind? And I was saying to you that the application of this word nous, mind, has to do with the mind as a conscious functioning process integrating the data of the brain. And in so saying, I'm saying that it is an overriding spirit of the mind. And that's what Paul says in Ephesians, be renewed in the spirit of your mind, right? The moment Christ comes into your mind or into your spirit, you are renewed. You do have these qualities. It's no use to say, well, I have this quality but not that. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, gentleness, faith, meekness, temperance, so forth. But don't say, now that I'm a Christian, I've got to get those things. Activity in our flesh, in our natural daily lives, might cloud or prevent that love from expressing itself. The love is there. If we approach a situation, however, in the mind, in the flesh, we're not going to exhibit those qualities. If we approach it in the spirit, that is to say, if our approach to it is, what do you want, Lord? In a certain circumstance, a person has been on the road for a great many years, was put in a situation which the person didn't like too much, but there were plenty of opportunities to minister, but they didn't like the situation. Well, even as a mature or seasoned Christian, this person said, but I don't want to be here. I want to be over there. All right, now, here at the later years of this person's life, the issue was not, I want to be where Christ wants me to be, but I don't like this situation, I want to be over here. Now that's approaching it in the mind. That doesn't mean they're not Christians. Doesn't mean that person is less than any other person. It just means that here is a situation where they approached it in the mind, in the flesh. Now, if the person were saying, I want here what Christ wants, that's approaching it in the spirit. What do you want, Lord? You do with me what you want to do. So there you see the love of, or the faith or the love or whatever can come out. When you relate to people, you see, you say, Lord, what do you want in this situation? You may say this is a rehash. Maybe it is, but it's another long transition. You're in a situation with another person and things are rocky. They're a problem. Now you either say, I'm going to have my way in this matter. I have my rights. How many times does that come up? I have a right to this and I have a right to that. As a human being, you have a right to whatever you want, but you may lose a lot of friends over it. But if you come to a situation on the basis of what you're going to get out of it personally, you're coming in the flesh. If you're saying, Lord, what is best for the both of us? Not what do I want? Where am I being offended? Where are my rights being abrogated? But what do you want? Then the Spirit will come through. I screen counseling sessions very carefully because most of the time the people don't really need me except as someone to defend their position. What both people really need to do is ask the Lord what He wants in the matter. We have this confrontation, and I want to say to you, your spirit is renewed the moment Christ comes in, and it's all there. But there, we've got to recognize that we have almost an alter ego situation, that there's a time when we function in the flesh, and a time when we look at things from the patterns in our brain, which are all fouled up anyway. You know, I've told you that before. Given all the prejudices and the ignorance and all the rest that's inscribed on that cortex, it's a wonder anybody ever thinks straight about anything. Only the Holy Spirit can straighten it out. And you say, Lord, help me to see this situation the way you see it. And He'll let you do that. We've used that many, many times personally, and I know the Lord will help to clear away the clouds the moment you come to the point that you say, I want to see it the way you want it. That is the primary difference between the Christian and non-Christian, because the Christian now has an instrument in the Spirit to put the pieces together aright. But apart from that Spirit instrument, we have to stumble along in the blind idiocies of the human psyche, and they are blind idiocies. Can you imagine how many false ideas and misconceptions are laid out in that skull, on that cortex? Every experience you've ever had in your life, negative and positive and in between, has gone down on that cortex. And apart from the Spirit of Christ, that's the way you're going to think. In the layman language, that grid is on your brain. That's the way you're going to think. You can be the holiest person this side of heaven, and you're still going to think that way. See, in the flesh. And that's why people get all distressed. They come to Christ and they think that they should be seeing everything differently, and they don't see everything differently. And you've heard it over and over again. How can you be a Christian and act like that? Very simple. You got a brain still. If you want to excise the brain and put in a dose of spirit and not live in the flesh, then it's different. But God doesn't excise the brain and put a glow inside your skull to make you an angel. And so you find yourself, as a Christian, still doing things, saying things, thinking things that have come out of your cortex as a person. But that doesn't mean you're not a new person in Christ. You may not have a new personality, but you are a new entity because you are now a spirit entity and able to function with Him throughout eternity. The moment the Spirit of Christ comes in, you have now the capacity to be an eternal person. The old things that pass away are the things that keep you from being a spirit person, to be with Christ for eternity. Yes?
I've heard the pat answer that everything's a spiritual problem.
But the Bible didn't say that, but that's a pat answer. Well, I just have to say everything isn't a spiritual problem. But spirit problem would be a problem that is based upon the fact that one doesn't want what Christ wants. That would be a spiritual problem. If you're going to make a choice of a wife or a husband, for example, and you don't pray about it, there's a spirit problem. It is a spirit matter to ask for guidance in your life. It is a spirit matter to encounter Christ. It is a spirit matter to identify with Him. The matter of temperaments and personality is a spirit matter in the sense that the spirit in you gives you normally the desire to do better, gives you the motive for doing better, but you do have to encounter these personality problems and deal with them in terms of their consequences. Now, if you wait for the spirit to make you a nice person to live with, you're going to have a lot of problems, you know, with your relationships. If every time you have a fight with your husband or your wife, you say, well, I'm going to go and see if the spirit will keep me from throwing tantrums. And that might, you know, there is a sense in which the spirit helps us with that. But the distinction is this, that Christ can be the ultimate cop-out to say, I have nothing to do with behaving myself. I have to wait till the Spirit of Christ makes me better. That's an ultimate cop-out, because you'll wait. You're trying to say, I don't want to have to face the consequences. I'll be whatever person I have to be, and they have to put up with me because the Lord hasn't seen fit yet to change me. See? You're presuming an awful lot. I've heard that expression quite often. Well, that's the way I am, and you just have to bear with it. And I say, maybe that's the way you were when you were 16, but if you're still that way at the age of 30, somebody hasn't grown up. Yes?
The statement that you hear people say, and I just heard this quoted today, the Lord helps those that help themselves.
Well, once again, that's not a biblical statement. There's nothing in this Bible that says that, and people say all kinds of fool things. But
what does one reply, though, when that is?
Say, it's not in the Bible, so I don't know. That's right. You know, if it's not something you can guess at it if you want to. A lot of things you can speculate about that aren't in the Bible, and you can give them an opinion if you want to, but you don't have to prove anything. There's nothing to prove. If they want to believe that, they'll have to believe it. In fact, that's a very important point. Don't argue with people about these things. If they want to believe that, that's up to them. If they feel that that's right. Now, I would turn that around myself and say that there are a lot of things in our personalities that the Lord expects us to grow up in, and He doesn't expect to wave a magic wand over us and have it changed like that. See? Maybe you have to grow up. A lot of what people don't understand is that a lot of the negative experiences of our lives, that is, where we're in trouble, may be just as much an experience with the Holy Spirit as the positive things. The Spirit of Christ is constantly pulling back the veneer. And some experiences people have, their habits, for example. Let's say, just as an example of things, let's say a person has a habit they want to get rid of, and let's say smoking, for example. Although, you know, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, and if everybody who smokes is going to hell. I'm just saying, as a habit, it's a commonly recognized problem. Now, the person can't get hold of it, and they pray about it, and they pray about it, and all of a sudden, they get a little spot on their lungs, and they go to the doctor, and the doctor says, if you don't quit smoking, you're going to be dead in 6 months, okay? Now there's the motivation, see? You lose your temper and you cause a lot of trouble in your home or with your young people. Many times a young person will just go and get in a lot of trouble over things that have happened in a home. Now the Christian person says, well, I blew it. I'll have to ask the Lord's forgiveness. That's right. You will. But if things happen to cause problems, the Spirit may be showing you the danger of losing your temper and give you the motivation you need to stop it. It isn't so simple. I wish I could tell you it was a simple thing and all you have to do is pray and the Lord will change everything, but He doesn't. I've been around this business, this whole thing for too many years, almost 40 years. I started speaking publicly in about 1942 or 43. Now, maybe you think I shouldn't have spoken until 1960, but anyway. But I've been around this thing for a long time, working with people and counseling with people. And I have to say to you, it's not so simple that you can just offer a prayer and have your personality changed. And I've also spent a lot of time in the study of physiology, the study of the brain, to try and understand these things. And the Lord has opened up, God Himself, I believe, has opened up great areas of understanding about the human mind that have helped us. People like to wave that aside and say, well, we don't need that, we just have the Bible. But in this complex generation, it's very important to understand the workings of the mind. So we try to do that. You know, as I've said, it's easy to understand basically what personality is. It's not so easy to change that. And there are people who have problems in the brain that are physiological problems that other people may assume are just psychological problems, functional problems, to say, well, they don't have to act that way, you know, and so forth. But there are patterns in the brain and the neurons. There's the Tourette syndrome, for example, which causes outbursts of people, involuntary outbursts. They can be in a restaurant or anywhere and just suddenly have an outburst, just like an epileptic fit. And they may say things and do things. They may bark like a dog or something like that right in the middle of a restaurant. It's called a Tourette syndrome. And it has to do with the transmitter chemical called dopamine, which transmits signals from one neuron to the other. It's one kind of transmitter. And if it's too abundant, it can cause this kind of an outburst. And you're not going to cure that always by just one prayer. It doesn't happen. It doesn't get cured that readily. Other things, there's just so many things that go on in his mind. But you see, the peace, the comfort I can give you tonight is that whatever personality problems you're struggling with now do not mean that you don't have the Spirit of Christ in you, you see. You can't say to somebody, how can you be a Christian and act like that? Somebody could say, well, if you were really saved, you wouldn't bark like a dog in a restaurant, you know. That isn't true at all. If you're really saved, you wouldn't have these temper tantrums. Well, there's a lot in the enzymes that are... See, everybody has their weaknesses of one thing or another. And there are controls and neural patterns. This, you may say, well, you're just getting too intellectual for us. It isn't true. I'm trying to give you the essence of faith that will help you to function at peace with God and with yourself in spite of these inscrutable problems of human personality. And even when I'm saying the things I am saying, which are very layman, even when I'm saying that, I have to remind us that we understand so little about the brain and personality and how it functions. And yet the hope is, the joy, the peace comes from the realization that the Spirit of Christ is with us in the midst of these, what we call aberrations, these maladaptive behavior patterns and so forth. He's with us still. And you don't ride the roller coaster. You don't assume that because you're low today, the Spirit is not with you. And He's more with you when you're high tomorrow. You can go through the roller coaster thing in your personality complex, your personal problems. You and your wife or your husband can have a spat at the table. And that doesn't mean you're not Christians. It means you ought to maybe shape up some of your attitudes. But neither does becoming a Christian wipe out all conflicts. In fact, one of the big conflicts it doesn't wipe out is the conflict between yourself and Christ. Now, why should there be a conflict between you and Christ? Because he's an adult and you're a child. There's always conflicts between adults and children. We don't understand what Christ does. We don't always see things his way, so we're in conflict with him. You got a question?
Yeah. The Bible says there's only works of the Spirit and works of the flesh.
All right. I don't know that it's exactly that way, but generally we say that you're functioning either from the Spirit or the flesh.
Those people that say, they cop out and they say, well, the Spirit hasn't changed me yet.
No.
But then you say that person should accept the responsibilities for his actions and do something about it. Now, if he does something about it, and he doesn't do it in his spirit, he must do it in the flesh. And if he does it in the flesh, and let's say he does become better in his attitude, we really can't say that that's good works. Good comes from the flesh. So if a person changes his attitude to the flesh, can't say it's good or bad then. We can only say that he just changed that.
All right. I think it's an important point to look at, in that these changes, if they're genuine changes, usually come as a result of the work of the Spirit with us. I wouldn't say the Spirit doesn't help us, but I'm saying that there are things we're responsible for. Now, another important point here is that being a Christian is possible even though there are personality conflicts. You're going to go to heaven in spite of the personality conflicts. And the reason for changing our personality conflicts, the reason for interacting with them, is not to make us a better Christian. But because we care about Christ, we are concerned about our personality problems. Now, changing these things and behaving ourselves is a good thing and an important thing and will help us in our human relationships. But doing that per se doesn't make us better Christians. It makes us better persons on the earth. You see, you've got a real conflict here, a real problem here, because there are just too many persons who are Christian people and who love Christ dearly who have personality problems. And they are not cured by this. If I can't give you the peace or the understanding to say that your personality conflicts are not keeping you from Christ, they're not keeping you from being a Christian, and you can handle them, you're going to have the help of the Spirit in handling them, but it's not going to come just by a magic wand. There's a combination. I think the bottom line, Bruce, is there's a combination of the work of the Spirit to encourage us to change and to bring to light our needs, a work of the Spirit in giving us the possibilities of change, but it's like strengthening your muscles in the sense that if you only receive a change by a miraculous intervention, you don't strengthen the total person. These are not simple questions simply because there's a lot of overlapping. I have to recognize that, and we all do. There's a lot of overlapping in the use of the term flesh. When Paul says, in my flesh there dwells no good thing, he's saying that the flesh, the natural mind, does not have the power within itself to make these changes apart from Christ. There's no good thing in it, and I would say to you emphatically that you need the power of Christ in you to come into conflict here and to bring about the changes that are necessary. But it is a combination. It's a combination of recognizing the consequences and not being careless about your life. The combination includes perspective. Because we have the Spirit in us, we have a perspective about life where things don't matter so much, and for that reason, we tend to modify our behavior. But I've known too many Christians, Bible-believing people even who call themselves Spirit-filled Christians, coming through their lives with personality problems. And I've seen some of the leaders of the country in terms of religious things, in terms of the faith, do things and say things that are out of order, plain out of order. Now, where is that coming from? Coming from a conflict in the flesh, in the personality. But that doesn't mean they are therefore now not filled with the Spirit, or they're therefore now not Christians. If I had to say to you that becoming a Christian would change all of these problems for you, or that a touch with the Spirit would, then I'd have to say that 95% of the Christians I know haven't had any touch. Yeah, because they all have these problems. They have these problems. The danger is in setting a standard about it that the moment one makes some mistake or has a personality problem, they have to automatically say the Spirit has left them, or that the Lord is not near, or something like that. I don't think you can show me a Christian that doesn't have conflicts in one way or another. But I want you to have the peace to believe that you are able to struggle with these things and still be at one with Christ. So it's a complex combination. And I have to emphasize only, what I'm trying to emphasize tonight is the side that says the interacting of the Spirit with our personalities brings about changes, because He confronts us with our weaknesses and our problems. He reminds us of what we need to do, but we cannot just wait until the Spirit changes that sort of thing, or assume He's going to change it without something in our lives that responds to the signals. You see, the Lord lets you see the consequences, like in handling your money. The Lord lets you see the consequences of overextending yourself on your budget, and you learn to handle your money. It isn't a spiritual thing. That's what I'm trying to say. But the Spirit may be involved in helping you to see your problems. The Spirit is involved in helping you to overcome it. But it isn't something that is done for you by an injection to make you a money-wise person. Well, I've done a lot of explaining here, but I just have to remind you, the bottom line is that it's a combination of the work of the Spirit in us and the practical realities of daily living that brings about the growth within us.